Canucks Central Friday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canucks Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main side and drink for only $15, served in 20 minutes or less at Boston Pizza. Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah. A lot to get into today. The Abbotsford Canucks and Colorado Eagles will play game four of their Calder Cup playoff series. Abbotsford with a chance to move forward with a win tonight. You'll hear it on Sportsnet 650. And the Florida Panthers continue to be very good, Sat.
Yes, they are excellent. And the Carolina Hurricanes. Listen, the Hurricanes, should we get into this now or wait?
We may as well. It's the Open on Canucks Central.
Welcome to the Open.
Oh! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Yeah, the Open on Canucks Central, where we bring the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. Canucks going through their scouting meetings. Abbotsford Canucks playing Colorado tonight. And the Stanley Cup playoffs continue to go on. The Panthers, 5-0 winners over the Carolina Hurricanes. And they just put on a clinic last night. The Hurricanes have now lost. Count of one to carry the one, 14 in a row in the conference finals.
14 in a row.
Yeah, that is not a mistake. According to my notes, 14 in a row they have lost in the conference finals.
It seems inconceivable to get that, like, to be a team that gets to the conference finals and just gets like swept away like that.
Yeah. Now every time.
Now I will say this: the series is not yet over. In hockey, going down 0-2, even on home ice, does not mean the end of your series. We see teams come back all the time, right?
Yeah.
Like it's not a death sentence in hockey like it is in other sports, well, namely in basketball.
Well, as Taylor Hall said after last night's game, I mean, it's not like they're perfect. They had Toronto take them to seven games. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just one of those things, right? And the Toronto Maple Leafs had a 2-0 lead.
Oh, almost had a 3-0 series lead,
right,
man.
So things can shift quickly. So I don't want to sit here and laugh at the Canes necessarily. But one thing I always thought was funny is just there seems to be that there's a lot of people like the Hurricanes because they think outside the box. They're very analytically inclined. Eric Tulsky was a very smart general manager. He has a lot of fans, and I wish him all the best. And I want Eric Tulsky to have success because I think that type of general manager is good to have in the NHL. I think it's good to have people that are very intelligent in those positions. But like, let them accomplish something before we anoint them something. And if you haven't gotten past the conference finals, how can we say your plan is impeccable? And listen, it's great that you got to the conference final, but who did they beat? And we talked about this. They beat the Devils that were banged up.
Yes.
They beat the Capitals, a good team. You saw how good they were in the regular season, but out of all the teams remaining in the playoffs, they were the weakest team remaining. That's not to take away from Carolina, but it's like, hey, why did people want to anoint them Stanley Cup champions after winning those two series? It's like, let's slow it down a little bit here because this team does have a couple real fatal flaws.
It's they've tried to address those fatal flaws. So I especially lately, you know, with Jake Guentzel and with Mikko Rantanen. So I find it hard to be too overly critical of how the Canes have built their team.
I'm not critical of it either. I'm just saying they don't have it still. Like they tried, but they still don't have that guy. They turned Rantanen into Stankoven.
I'm not sure it's a personnel issue as much as it might be a coaching issue. And I think Rod Brind'Amour is an incredible coach, but does he need to evolve as a head coach and change some of his tactical style and some of the way that he believes the Canes should be playing hockey in order for them to take a next step? Because there's a lot of talent on this team. It just feels like they all kind of top out at 70 points and that's who they are.
Yeah, it's not necessarily wrong.
Is there another level for guys like Svechnikov and Aho and those guys, or is this just who they are?
Well, Svechnikov has been better in the playoffs. He wasn't good in game two.
Yeah.
But he has been scoring in the playoffs. He's actually had a couple of quiet seasons in a row, goal scoring wise, but in the postseason this year he's been a lot better. I like Sebastian Aho a lot. Like there are a lot of things about their team I'd really do like. And I'm not even sure like it's just about the goal scoring. To me, the construction of their defense is the thing that I don't think is talked about enough. Slavin's incredible.
Yeah.
Orlov is very solid.
Yeah.
Gostisbehere can't defend. Sean Walker can get bullied.
Yeah.
And when you have two players who play big minutes that can get bullied and pushed around and in critical moments can blow assignments, like that's not a good recipe in the postseason. You can't have two guys who play roles like that be able to get turned around like that. Like those are fatal flaws. And I think for all the talk about their offense, that is what I've been looking at the last few games and wondering, like, is that really what's going to cost them these series?
They have Nikishin coming. Morrow's played a little bit in this series. He's been coming for a while. But as good as Slavin is, does he need a partner that's got a high-end offensive gear that can also like play alongside him? Kind
if
of.
Brent Burns was 8 years younger.
Yeah,
he'd be great.
Kind of like okay, like Devon Taves has Cale Makar.
Yeah,
right. Like okay, there's only one Cale Makar. I get that. So don't crush me.
Or
for
even
it,
a Filip Hronek. Like yeah. They don't even have a Filip Hronek.
No.
You know, they're
like
good.
He used
they're
to be
Brent team.
Burns, but Burns right. is 40.
Now Orlov is solid. Again, like he's but he's not even at the level he was before. But again, like
they have Slavin and then they have some solid guys, and you know, they have Gostisbehere. Like Ghost, they've used him really well for what he is. But yeah, he does get exposed every now and again.
Yeah. Now they do have some extra draft picks. They have young players. They're a team I can see be very active.
Mm-hmm.
But as constructed, I wasn't sold on them in the postseason, and they were kind of set as being these big favorites as well. I know the odds makers had them as the odds on favorites to win the Stanley Cup, and I'm like,
yeah,
I get it analytically because the analytics are great for them, but
how are the analytics when they only get 17 shots on net though?
Well, yeah, but the last couple games, but before that, heading into the series, like they were still analytically one of the better teams in the playoffs.
Is it?
They've been great defensively.
Like, there's not too much. It's crazy, but like there's not too much difference between like their playoff failures than compared to the Maple Leafs. They have more series wins, mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
But 14 straight losses in the conference final. How do you not look in the mirror and be like, what's wrong with this picture? What are we doing wrong? What are we not? How are we not getting over this hump?
Yeah.
And I think like that has to be a natural thing, but there's just not as much discussion about it because I don't know, it's Carolina. They're not expected. They don't have the same star power that the Leafs have had over the last number of years. I don't know. It's puzzling to me that there was that people don't look at it and see two very similar situations. If you flip the situation to be, well, if Carolina were in the Atlantic Division and Toronto was in the Metro Division, you know, the Leafs probably have a bunch more playoff series wins if they don't have to go up against the Bruins or Tampa for all those years,
mm-hmm.
which is the teams that Carolina hasn't been able to get past once they've reached the conference final.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I'd much rather be in a spot where I'm trying to get off the hump of being the fourth best team in the league.
Yeah.
As opposed to where the Canucks are, where we're talking about them being, what, the 17th best team in the league, 16th yeah. best team in the league, and they're trying to get into the hump of being, like, you know, a top 12 team. Like, I'd much rather be in this spot, so I'm not sure you have to throw out the plan because you're that close to it.
And
but have you reached your ceiling yeah. trying to do what you're trying to do?
But the thing that's about their plan that's better than others, better than the Leafs, better than some of these other teams we're talking about, even the Canucks, right? Like the Canucks are a bubble playoff team and they're capped out. They don't have a ton of assets to work with. Whereas Carolina's got prospect pool talent. They've got draft pick pool talent assets to mm-hmm. trade for something big. They have a ton of cap space as well. Well, a lot more cap space than the Vancouver Canucks do going into this offseason. So like they have the three things you kind of need to be able to go out and improve your roster in more abundance than other teams that are in their position. So they have the ability to take that next step.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, some the Canucks, the Leafs, some of these other teams, Colorado, they've spent a lot of those assets and that ability to take that next step and really add something of significance to their roster.
Yo, and they have the guys that they want signed up long term.
Yeah, at good numbers.
You know, the only guy they couldn't sign was Rantanen.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I mean, Natchez, it was clear it was a two-way street and mm-hmm. neither side was in love.
Yeah.
You know, and I see people texting in like Gerb
saying
it.
Mutual parting of ways.
Yeah, Gerb says, I bet they miss Natchez. They might miss him on the ice, but I'm not sure they do.
Yeah.
Especially Brind'Amour, right? but like, I think it's fascinating with Carolina because they're trying to win the cup differently. And have you reached the ceiling of trying to win the cup differently? You know what I mean? Like, is this something you can overcome? Or is this like the best you can do under the current way you're trying to go about things.
Well, one of the things about Rantanen and leaving, you know, he clearly wasn't a fan of their style of play, and I think that played a part into his decision. And I just, you know, I wonder if...
Like, that's a limitation. Like, if you can't... Like, we talk about Vancouver not attracting guys.
Yeah.
If your market can't attract that guy... Like,
star players want to be star players, you know? Guys like Rantanen and those types, they want to play 22 to 24 minutes a night at least, right? And, you know, if you're not giving them or affording them that opportunity because that's not your team ethos, that's tough... It's a tough speed bump to overcome. And it's one thing, like, that's what's limiting their ceiling to a certain extent.
No, I don't
disagree.
Or it
feels like it does.
I don't disagree. But it's interesting, though, because, like, you know, we always look at things through the Canucks lens, right? And you mentioned how much more favorable the position the Hurricanes find themselves in.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's been a lot of discourse on the station over the course of the past day, too, about how far away the Canucks are. And, like, we know how far away they are. But... the task was always going to be impossible to turn this team as they're currently built into a legitimate cup contender next season.
Yeah.
The best you can do is get closer and be on a path that could impress Quinn enough for him to stay here long term.
Get back to where you were 12 months ago.
Yeah. Which this seems like a massive task, you know? And I think everybody's really terrified about what this team is going to do. And we'll get to the mailbag about, like, what are they going to be giving up and why won't they take a patient approach? Again, I don't think they're looking to trade for older guys. Like, if they're trading for somebody, it would be a younger player that kind of fits in that sense. But are they even going to be able to pull it off? Like, for all the fear people have, are they even going to be able to pull off what people are so afraid of them doing?
What's the probability on them being able to pull it off?
I'm not sure. It's great. You know, and they are going to make additions.
Yes.
But I don't know if it's going to end up being the big one. Like, are you going to win those sweeps? You just mentioned Carolina. What if Carolina says, you know what, Stan Coben, you know, we like this guy, but he's a little small.
That's what happened with Gensel.
Let's flip him.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, things might happen. All of a sudden, there are teams that have so much more than Vancouver that if they want to get the bidding wards, and you've made this point for the past few weeks to months, that the Canucks are not in an advantageous position. Now, they have a will. They have relationships with Rutherford, so I wouldn't be surprised if they pull something off, right? Mm-hmm. But like, it's a really difficult thing. Like, I don't know, it's a foregone conclusion that one of their top prospects in a first-round pick is gone.
It's at least... likely on the table.
It absolutely is on the table. You know. I'm just saying, is that going to be like all the, like, people say, hey, don't trade Hronek, don't trade this, but trade the 15th overall pick. Like, what's the 15th overall pick in and of itself getting you?
Not something great. Like, you know, I mentioned this before, but like Kirby Dach got traded for what, 13th, 12th overall? And, you know, Kirby Dach was a distressed asset for the Chicago Blackhawks and hasn't really turned that corner with the Montreal Canadiens. Even still. So the 15th overall pick, it might get you a guy that was recently drafted in the high first round that just hasn't worked out for whatever reason, but it's not getting you an established player. It's getting you a projection.
Yeah.
It's not enough to get you something big time. So that's a limitation the Canucks have. I guess they could always just be the team that pays Sam Bennett $10 million in free agency.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing.
Okay, so this was...
nobody's acting. Like, if he makes a free agency...
Is this scuttlebutt amongst media and looking ahead to free agency? Sam Bennett had another two-goal, three-point night. Mm-hmm. You know, guy is just a legend for how well he played in the Four Nations and how he's playing for Florida here in these playoffs. Is this hype of the playoffs for a guy heading towards free agency and trying to get the most money he possibly can? Or is this a reality where a team might actually back up the Brinks truck for Sam Bennett and potentially give him $10 million a season? Is it fiction?
Well, I don't know if it's fake. Like, I don't think...
Is it hyperbole or is it reality?
No, I think that the reporters that are reporting this are people that have sources.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're just making it up and scuttlebutting it. You know what I mean? So I think the sources...
EJ Raddick of NHL Network.
Yeah. Now, how much of this is, we hear this a lot where agents leak stuff like this. And the reporting is earnest because this is what they're being told. Like, hey, our projections and our intel tell us he might get $10 million. But we hear this...
At least one team would be willing to offer $10
million. We hear this every single free agency, right? That there is one team willing to do, like, we always bring up the Myers example, how it was supposed to be 7x7 or 8x8 even at one point. Like, those are the numbers that we're being thrown around, or 8x7 around Myers for a while, or 7x7, and the number looked a lot different at the end, right? I don't know if anybody gives Ben a 10.
Yeah.
But is that a way that, you know, that puts pressure on Florida that, hey, he's not going to sign for $5 or $6 million. You want him to stay, you're going to have to pay him at least what Verhaeghe got. And
which
I want 8 years.
$7 million per season.
Yeah, but over 8 years.
Which would still be a great contract for Sam Bennett, $56 million, more in line with his point production.
Yeah.
But the hype that's coming around Sam Bennett is because he's a player of a bygone era.
Yeah, he is. He is.
He's got the sandpaper and grit that you want at the most difficult time of year.
Yeah, and I think as much as I like Sam Bennett,
does that get you an extra $1 million a season, $2 million a
sure.
season?
If you're Vancouver, like let's say that you actually have a chance to sign him.
Yeah.
What are you willing to pay him?
Oh, I'd probably. I mean, I'm kind of similar to Florida. I don't really want to go above $7 million. You know, for a guy that's gotten
$7 million
50,
in Florida
50 points.
Seven in Florida is a lot different than seven in Vancouver.
So at least you're looking $8 million per season. So 64, well, that would still be 56.
So the point of the $10 million, I don't think the Canucks can make Bennett think unless they offer him $8.5-$9 million per year.
Yeah.
So like if that's what we're talking about, what's 10? But I still have a hard time believing if he makes it to free agency, he's getting $70 million. I just have a hard time believing it. But nonetheless, but as much as I like Sam Bennett, and I think he'd be an incredible ad for Vancouver, can the Canucks afford to pay a Sam Bennett type $8 to $9 million per season?
No, because then what else are you getting?
Exactly. Like they don't have enough for him to be the finishing piece.
You have $14 million in cap space going into the summer. You're going to use more than 50% of that on Sam Bennett?
He's a finishing piece.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes you can sequence the pieces the way you want, right? Mm-hmm. And say, hey, it's about getting them. And sometimes you get the latter piece sooner and then the one you really wanted a step or two later than you expected. But at the end of the day, you got those guys, right? But when you're allocating that much cap space to a player, that's the thing. Like to me, like I just don't know if this team is anywhere near good enough that you can justify giving a guy like Sam Bennett $9 million. Now, I think it's a moot point anyways, because number one, I don't think he's making the free agency.
Yeah.
And number two, there is no way he's coming to Vancouver.
He's probably like, this whole thing ultimately is probably a play, a leak from the agent to get an extra $500,000 a year from the Florida Panthers.
Sure, yeah.
Something to that effect that gets him closer to a number that he's comfortable with. Because, I do think given the shallow free agent pool that we are looking ahead to on July 1, I wouldn't be surprised if some team blows their brains out to get Sam Bennett on their roster.
Yeah, I can
and does
see
something
it.
Really silly. We've seen it in the past, and now with a rising cap, there's no telling what team might be the one that does that.
So the most out-of-pocket signing, I think, in NHL in cap era was a Scott Gomez deal. Yeah. He got 7.37 over 7 years when the cap was like $40 million.
Yeah. But I mean, the Rangers were the biggest culprit. It was, I guess, Bobby Holik was pre.
No, it was pre.
But they gave him what, $10 million?
It was $10 million, but it was pre-cap. Yeah. Like I'm talking cap error because before it didn't matter. It didn't matter.
But even then, like it's
it was nuts, but it did not matter because it didn't.
But Bobby Holik was never in anybody's dream a $10 million player.
You're right, but the cap was what got in the way.
Yes.
Because Bobby Holik, if there was a cap, there was no way the Rangers would have paid him $10 million.
No.
But they gave Gomez $7 million. So like Gomez getting $7 million back in 2007, that offseason.
That was what? That was like a 40 some odd million dollar cap. That
it was almost, I was, yeah. And it was, I think it was like 17-18%. It was like really, it was one of the highest cap percentages for that contract. That would be well in excess of $10 million. That equivalent would be something like $13 million or something, which is insane to think about, right? But so I don't know if it ever matches the Gomez one, but it's kind of similar to that to me, like where you're paying that type of player. And Gomez, to Gomez's credit, he had a 33 goal season. He had a couple 80 goal years, 80 point years, I think. He had some 60 point years. Bennett's never crested more than 51 points.
Yeah. It's it's the biggest reason why I'd be scared to death to give Sam Bennett a bunch of money.
Yeah. And listen, I think
you need a baseline of production if you're going to give somebody $9-10 million, and he doesn't meet that baseline of production.
No, here's the thing. I disagree depending on your situation. If Vancouver had JT Miller signed and they didn't have Connor Garland on the books, you're not bringing Besser back, then I'm like, you know what? Sure, go give Bennett $8-9 million. Because you have those two centers, and now you have Bennett. I sign up for that any day. I pay the premium. I don't care by overpaying. But can you afford to overpay now when you might be 2 or 3 years away from really competing anyways at best?
Yeah.
I just, it doesn't make, for where the Canucks are currently from either side, it just does not make sense.
The other part of this that is interesting to me, what does free agent look like in this rapidly rising cap era that we're heading into over the next 3 years? There's going to be a lot of sticker shock on contracts this year, next year, the year after.
It'll be like Timofey Mozgov.
Like, are we going to see the Ville Leino contracts again and those kinds of things happening?
I'm skeptical,
the David Clarkson contract all those years ago. Some of these crazy ones from years gone by.
I'm skeptical because I think a lot of NHL teams are at their budgets anyways.
Right.
And how many teams outside of, say, Toronto and, you know, go through a couple, are truly willing to overspend?
To spend to the cap.
Yeah, because, hey, the Red Wings back in the day spent a lot of money. It was a little bit different. And, you know,
the Red Wings in the early 2000s had a $100 million team payroll.
Yeah, they did.
So
and now, but the cap's going to be $100 million. Now, it's different back then, how much more that money is worth compared to now, right? But, like, that was also the Ilitch. Like, Ilitch wanted to win really, really badly. And he's not around anymore. Like, it's not the same way, you know what I mean? So, like, I'm not sure there are teams that have the same appetite to go out and do these sort of things.
Well, the only thing the salary cap really did was save owners from themselves from spending.
Yeah.
And you know, the Leafs, Rangers and Red Wings all had close to $100 million payrolls pre-salary cap, and they had to whittle it down to $39 million for the first year of the salary cap.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, those teams, especially early on in the cap days, were making money hand over fist given the reduced salaries that they were working with. And now it's kind of gotten back to where those teams can spend $100 million again at the upper limit. It's going to create, ultimately, I hope it gets more players to want to go to free agency. Because it's been a situation, like, look at this year and look at years past. Guys are just like, yeah, I'll just re-sign with my current club. Because
the incentive is to make more money, too.
Yeah.
And hockey's philosophy has always been, and you talk to agents always say, get the most money you can for the longest term possible. Mm-hmm. That's the main objective that teams have, is total money. But you get the most total money by the longest years.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's how it, you know, how they go about it. So unless that philosophy changes.
Yeah. It's because you just don't see a lot of stars hit free agency. I mean, Tavares did, Johnny Gaudreau did, and he ended up taking less money in free agency than he was being offered by the Calgary Flames at the time. Brad Richards did. He got 20% of the cap.
Yeah.
He's the only player in cap era history to get 20% of the cap. Artemi Panarin wanted to go to New York, ended up getting a lot of money there, but you have to pay a lot to overcome the ability of the, you know, the team that owns the player's rights, that they have that eighth year to give. And that's something hard to overcome, but it might be easier to overcome in a rising cap era if teams are really willing to spend a lot more, which maybe there won't be a ton of them. All right, quickly in the playoff central roundup, Canucks central roundup, Abbotsford Canucks and Colorado Eagles tonight. It's game 4 of the series from Loveland, Colorado. Abby move on with a win. Do or die is game 5 on Monday at 2 p.m. if they lose. So there won't be a Canucks Central on Monday.
If
the Abbotsford Canucks and Colorado Eagles are playing a do or die game 5 on Memorial Day.
Right. Well, we want success for the Abbotsford Canucks.
We do.
Yeah. We put that above our work schedule.
We are professionals. Yes. Who would want a long weekend? Islanders hire Matthew Darsh as GM. Shanahan not expected to go there. Leafs noncommittal on letting Marner walk to free agency. So, they're probably going to make a run at signing their big-time free agent. Shevel Dayoff, Zito, and Jim Nill are finalists for GM of the Year, the Jim Gregory Award. Nill has won the award in back-to-back years and getting a finalist nod yet again for that juggernaut he's built in Dallas. Pretty good team.
Not bad.
And PWHL Vancouver has named Kara Gardner-Morey as their GM. She's been with Princeton the last number of years, second winningest coach in history of that Princeton squad, and she is now the GM of the PWHL Vancouver team. Their expansion draft is approaching on June the 9th. Guests on Sportsnet 650, call in on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. Yannick Hansen will join us on the hotline next on Sportsnet 650.